Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service of the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Sabbath when we come back. Well, how many laws did Moses give us in the Mosaic Law, and how many laws has our government, our state, given us in our secular government? Well, Moses gave us 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. The state at last count has given us 2.5 million laws. That's right, 2.5 million. And Peter said that we ought to obey God rather than men in Acts 5, verse 29. Congress said we ought to voluntarily apply the teachings of the Scripture in the lives of families, individuals, and societies. That's Public Law 97-280. And our Supreme Court said that there's a higher loyalty than loyalty to this country. They said that's loyalty to God. They said that in Seeger versus United States. You know, every authority is in agreement. The Congress, the Supreme Court, and God Almighty Himself are all in agreement. And the Scriptures are the final authority on law. Now, if you'd like to learn these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and how to use them against government intrusion into your God-given rights, it's a right, it's a duty, it's an obligation that we owe to ourselves, our families, and to our society. We teach all 759 of these statutes, judgments, and commandments here at the law school, along with the penalties for the violation of these laws, and we do that twice a year in the spring and in the fall. So why don't you make it a point to regain your First Amendment right to free exercise this year? You know, the First Amendment is the gateway to the Second and to your whole Bill of Rights. Now, the law of God may be old, but it's not old-fashioned, and it's very relevant to our lives and to our rights today. That's right, right here in the USA. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. All right, do it right now before you forget. Hey, we're talking about the Sabbath day. So in case you're an atheist or an agnostic or you're an evolutionist or something like that, this isn't an altar call. We're not trying to get you to practice the Sabbath day. I don't give a rat's, you know what, whether you do or don't. I'm a reporter. I report on facts. I report on neat stories. This was a pretty neat story, I thought. So I thought I'd report on it. And the last time we talked about, well, what is this thing called the Sabbath? So I think I went through that from the Bible, from the Scripture. Now, people have their ideas about the Sabbath. Then they get that from the Pope, and they get that from church, and they get that from this or that book or something else. And then there's the Bible. And I thought, well, let's open up the Bible and find out, well, what did the author of the Sabbath, what did the creator of the Sabbath have in mind when he came up with this idea, which, by the way, is a capital felony. Yeah, capital felony if you don't practice the Sabbath. So I thought I'd share that with you and let you know what the penalty is. And then, of course, there's another one. You know, this the Sabbath day is a weekly Sabbath. That's 52 of those. And there's seven annual Sabbaths that you see recorded in Leviticus chapter 23, all seven of them. And then you've got these two extra Sabbaths. It's the land Sabbath once every 7 years. And then once every 50 years, there's a whole year that's a Sabbath year. Did you know that? Not just one day, 24 hours, but a whole year, 365 days. Two of those. One every 7 years and then one every 50 years. That's just to really tie you up in knots in case you're really ticked off. So I just thought I'd go to the Bible and we'd find out. I told you about the Jehovah's Witness story, and I told you about the Sabbath appears 135 times in the Bible. The word Sabbath day appears 23 times in the Bible. The word Sabbaths, plural, appears 35 times, 193 times. And so I took down all 193 of them. I've got all of the citations right here in front of me. And one of the citations I thought I'd bring to your attention, because I got a story here. It's called Dayspring. I don't know who sent it to me, but somebody did. And in this little, it's not a tract, it's actually about 5 or 6 or 7 pages of material called The Dayspring by Craig Peters. I don't know who Craig Peters is, but anyway, he wrote a book called The Dayspring. It's a little article. Scriptural proof that a day begins in the morning. The day begins in the morning. Now, I'm not going to read you this story here and bore you to tears, but the Dayspring. Hast thou commanded the morning since thy days and caused the Dayspring to know his place, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth, that the wicked might be shaken out of it? Job 38, 12 and 13. And he goes on with day one, day two, day three, four, five, you know, of the creation week. And then he talks about the rainbow. And tomorrow is the new moon. And Saul consults a spiritist by night and dies the next day. And I mean, he's got a story here. He's a religious guy. This is a religious guy. He's got a story to tell. Now, I'm an old country boy. I don't know much about religion. I never went to church or Sunday school. I went to Sunday school twice. And when I was in the Lutheran church, I'll tell you a little story here. I was in the Lutheran, my dad married a Lutheran woman. And she wasn't very religious, but you know how these religious people are, you know. They're kind of like Catholics. They got to go to church on Christmas and Easter, whether they need to or not. Well, Lutherans are kind of that way too, you know, but they go to church three or four more times during the year. Well, anyway, they sent me to a Lutheran day school. And the school was good. I mean, it was better than public school, and that's what they wanted. They wanted to give me the greatest opportunity of educational excellence that they could. And so, you know, my old dad, he said, Mom, we'll send this kid to private school. So, you know, private schools are generally Catholic school or Lutheran school or Baptist school or, you know, some religious denomination puts on the school. And so they usually got a little better program than the public school. And I don't deny that this one did, but, you know, they want you to go to Sunday school. They don't want you to just go to school Monday through Friday. Then they want you to go to church on Wednesday night. And they want you to go to church on Sunday. They want you to go to Sunday school on Sunday. You know, if you went to all these meetings and all, you wouldn't have any time to go hunting or fishing or do jack diddly squat that, you know, really means something in life. That was kind of my conclusion at age 12. So I didn't go to church and I didn't go to Sunday school. Well, say for a couple of times, me and Bill Hannah, we didn't think too much of it. So every Monday morning, you know, Mr. Witt would come to ask all the little boys and girls, you know, did you go to Sunday school? And so if you said yes, you got a silver star. No, I'll take that back. If you went to Sunday school, you got a red star. Okay. And if you went to church, you got a silver star. But if you went to both Sunday school and church, and guess who went to Sunday school and church and never missed a Sunday? You guessed it. It was Judy Hartson. Yeah. The little snitch that couldn't keep her mouth shut, that was following me around with a clipboard night and day, trying to figure out what I'd done wrong, so that she always went, oh, she gasped for air when she saw my behavior. She'd just gasp and go, oh, and then she'd run and tell teacher on me. See? Well, anyway, I was Judy Hartson. She had straight gold stars across there. And then, of course, most of the other kids, you know, they had either red stars or silver stars. And here's Bill and George Gordon down there, blank. Just a great big long line of blank across there. But I think I did have two red stars on there where I went to Sunday school as Mrs. Ray, the Sunday school teacher. I've reported on that, those two experiences in my life, two traumatic experiences at Sunday school. Well, anyway, now you found out about my church keeping. Well, over here in Leviticus 23, verse 32, remember we were talking about this guy, this religious guy called the Day Spring guy? He said, scriptural proof that a day begins in the morning. I read his article over here, and here was my conclusion. There's no mention of Leviticus 23, verse 32. I want you to write that down, Leviticus 23, 32, because it tells you when the day begins in the Bible. Did you know that? And then this guy uses circular reasoning, assumes facts, not in evidence. He's dishonest in his citations. He has five misquotations, and he omits evidence. And that was my conclusion just after reading his article. Nice guy. His name is Craig Peters. I'm sure you'll love him. He's probably got a wife and two dogs and a patch of grass to mow. Well, anyway, over here in Leviticus 23, 32, and here's what God has to say about that. He says, it shall be unto you a Sabbath of rest, and you shall afflict your souls. In the ninth day of the month at even, from even until even, shall you celebrate your Sabbath. Even until even. You know, no, I ain't too smart. I didn't go to Harvard, as they say, Harvard. I didn't go to Harvard, but, you know, I can read that. From evening until evening. Now, when does evening show up? Isn't it about sundown? I just thought I'd share that with you. Sundown. Sundown to sundown is when you celebrate your Sabbath, and there you got it straight from God himself, live and direct. Now, if you want to celebrate your Sabbath from midnight to midnight, that's fine by me. I don't care. If you want to celebrate your Sabbath from 12 noon to 12 noon, that's okay too. But, you know, if you come up in the judgment and you walk into the judgment hall and God says to you, hey, Joe, come on over here. I want to talk to you about the Sabbath. Can you tell me when the Sabbath starts? Hey, Craig. Hey, Craig Peters. Can you tell me when the Sabbath day begins? And you tell him it's 12 noon, boss. And maybe you'll say, well, it was 12 midnight, boss. And when I come in, he's going to say, hey, Gordon, do you have any idea when the day begins? I'm going to say, yeah, I figured that it was probably from even until even. And then God's going to pick one of us, you know, the noon guy, the midnight guy, or the even to even guy, and maybe give us a job, or maybe, you know, maybe he'll pour us a drink, and have a little Jack Daniels on the rocks or something like that. I don't know what the reward's going to be, per se. But I would say that my chances are a little better than yours if you got this midnight to midnight thing. So there's one more little thingy there that we thought we'd have to learn. Okay, now we got another thing here called the rotating Sabbath. The rotating Sabbath. I'm going to circle that one off here. I forgot who sent me that. I think it was John Brown. John Brown. John, thank you very much. He sent me a story here on the Sabbath, how it rotates, you know, based upon the moon. Now, this is one of those negative things over here. See, a guy by the name of Larry Beecraft, he's great at this. God bless old Larry. Larry Beecraft, he takes negative arguments and proves them. I don't want to waste my time doing it. I can tell you, I looked at 1,189 chapters in the Bible, and I can't find any reference to the moon being used to calculate the Sabbath days. None. Zero. Zilch. I mean, I looked at it, and I couldn't find it. Now, my job is to prove to you that it doesn't exist. How in the hell can I prove to you that something doesn't exist if it isn't mentioned? It's like trying to prove to you that the world isn't flat. I guess I could prove to you that the world is round, and therefore, if it's round, it can't be flat, because it couldn't be both round and flat, but, you know. Well, old Larry Becraft, he's pretty good, because he likes to take on these kind of challenges, you know, and go through here and prove to you that the Sabbath doesn't rotate. I pointed out to you that the Sabbath has a the in front of it. It says the Sabbath, and then it was the seventh day. Now, if you look up here on your calendar, just to be pragmatic here, if you look on the calendar, you'll see that the first day of the week is Sunday, the second day is Monday, third is Tuesday, fourth is Wednesday, fifth is Thursday, sixth is Friday, and the seventh is Saturday. You remember last program I said the seventh day? Okay. Well, that weekly cycle has been going on from the Garden of Eden until today. No time hasn't been lost, but there's a unique argument that comes along called Joshua's Long Day. That's quite a little story. See, Joshua was out fighting a bunch of hooligans there in the land of Canaan right after Moses died, and they went over there. He was having some beefs with the people of the land there, the native inhabitants, and they were in the process of throwing them out, killing them off and throwing them out. And so they had a battle one day, and the day lasted for about 2 days. Not quite 2 days, but it was 23 hours and 20 minutes. It's 40 minutes short. God couldn't count again. He's debilitated. Couldn't count. So later on in the Bible, he picks up that 40 minutes. It's called the Sundial of Ahaz. So the mistake that he made there when they had Joshua's long day, it wasn't quite two whole days. It was only 23 hours and 20 minutes longer than an ordinary day. And so many people have come up with that and said, well, see, now that's what threw the weekly cycle out of balance, and it's now on Sunday. Well, just to throw a little cold water on that, it calls Joshua's long day just that, a long day. Not 2 days into one, and there's no further explanation. So my conclusion is that Joshua's long day was a nearly 48-hour day. Not quite, but almost a 48-hour day, which was then made up by Ahaz, the old King Ahaz there. He was sick one day, and so he was about ready to die, and he wanted to have a little more time, so God gave him 15 more years of life. And he said to Ahaz, what do you want me to do for you? And he said, well, turn the sundial backward 10 degrees. I think it was 10 degrees. All right, so there's that story over there. It's called the Rotating Sabbath. Now, this Sabbath day versus a Sabbath day, everywhere I see in here, I don't see any place in the Bible where it says a Sabbath day. Using the article A, it's always the seventh day, the Sabbath day. Remember, the Sabbath day. It is one particular day. You know, it's kind of like, remember January. Remember January. Now, it's 12 months in the year, but there's only one January. So if you want to remember January, well, it just comes around one time. Now, remember Martin Luther King was born in January. Can you remember that? So I just thought there's a pretty clear distinction there in the Scripture. Now, you know, maybe the word A and the to you mean the same thing, but it seems like to me in the Scripture it's got a different meaning. It just kind of seems that way to me. Now, does it make any difference which day of the week that you keep? You know, most people say, well, I keep a Sabbath day on Wednesday because that's my day off. You know, or I get Wednesday and Thursday off because I'm on a rotating Sabbath working for United Airlines in the San Francisco maintenance department or maintenance hangar. So anyway, the moral of the story is, it does. Because you see, A isn't the, and so therefore, if you're not keeping the Sabbath day, whether it's on Sunday, Friday, Monday, Wednesday, whatever day it is, it's a violation of the law. See, in order for us to give you the death penalty for failing to keep the Sabbath, it has to be identifiable. I mean, you can't have a law that's vague and ambiguous. We call that constitutionally vague and ambiguous. Many times the Supreme Court will overturn a statute because it's vague and ambiguous. Well, you know, would you expect the creator of the universe to screw up? Well, most people would say, yeah, he's been wrong most of his career, so why would he be right on this one here? Well, you know, I've checked into this a couple of times, and I've reported back to you that this God, the God of the Bible, you know, the creator God, he ain't as wrong as we thought he was most of the time. And I don't think he made a mistake on the Sabbath day over here. So if it makes a difference over here, it's a capital felony. You got to be able to identify the day. And that's only part of the problem, because after you've identified the day, then you have to keep the Sabbath day. There's something that you have to do to keep it. Hold it. You know, whether it's you stand up and sing three songs, or you sit down and pray, or you kneel. I was at the church one time. My first wife, she was a Catholic. And it was Christmas, and she said, you need some religion, so you need to go to church. And so I thought I needed to go to church like I needed three thumbs on my left hand. But, you know, when you're in love, you know, you do a lot of crazy things. And I thought I was in love, so I went to church with her. See, it was a Catholic church. And these Catholics are pretty funny people. And so we went in there. Now, she didn't have a hat, so she had to put her handkerchief on her head, see. Can't go into church without a handkerchief on your head. So she's got her hanky on her head, and she goes in and sits down. And so pretty soon, this guy comes out in here, and he's tinkling bells, and he's waving smoke and one thing and another. And pretty soon, she and everybody, they all do this at the same time. It's choreographed. And they all got down on their knees. There's a kneeling bench in Catholic Church, and I'll find this. All you Protestants out there, you probably wouldn't know. But they got this bench, and you kneel down on this bench, you know, so you don't have to get your pants dirty on the floor. And so I'm sitting there, and so I got to looking around a little bitching home. So I thought, well, shucks, maybe I better get down here and kneel like everybody else. And so I got down there and kneeled, and that guy rang some bells and spread some more smoke around. Everybody stood up. And there I was down there kneeling on this bench, see? And then I looked up, and all these people were standing up, and this guy's tinkling bells and blowing smoke. And pretty soon, I said, well, I guess I better stand up like everybody else. And so I stood up, and by the time I stood up, everybody else sat down. And there I was, the only guy in the whole church standing up. This guy up front, no, he's tinkling bells, and he's waving smoke again. I don't know if he's smoking Roy Tan cigars or what, but anyway, this went on about 4 or 5 times. I mean, those guys were kneeling, I was standing. Those guys were sitting, and I was standing. And those guys were kneeling, and I was sitting, and I couldn't get it right. And that's one reason I gave up on Catholicism. Hell, I couldn't get the routine down. So I just quit. I sat down, and I said, hell, I ain't going through this. It was last time, my first time and last time in Catholic Church. I suppose if you were trained, you know, and you'd been to Catholic Church, you know, a few times, I couldn't even get trained in a Lutheran church, much less the Catholic gang over there. All right, now last time we were talking about this thing, you know, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, you remember that? Well, that's in Exodus 20, verse 8, 9, 10, 11. It's a long commandment, and it says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And you shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, because it's holy unto you. Everyone that defiles it shall surely be put to death, for whosoever does any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. That's in Exodus 31:14. All right, so this is pretty serious business. It carries a death penalty. You can't work on this day. We haven't figured out what day it is yet, but you can't work on that day. And if you work on it, you're defiling it. So there's a story in here, you know, about a guy that was out here working on the Sabbath, and they put him to death. That comes a little later here. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the eternal. Whosoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall surely be put to death. That's Exodus 31:15. So in 31:14, 31:15, it's not the only place, not tells you that this got the death penalty connected with it. But I just thought I'd point that out. Then we come to Leviticus. In Leviticus chapter 23, Leviticus 23, all 7 annual holy days are put in. That's for you Seventh-day Adventists. The Adventists over here, they keep the Sabbath, and they get really, really, really righteous and holy and indignant if you don't keep the Sabbath. And then I always ask them, well, how come you don't keep the annual Sabbaths? And they don't know. Now, some of them think they should. Some of them think they shouldn't. Some of them have been excommunicated for bringing up the subject. I got no buddy. His name is Louis Meitzer out in Trinity County, California. He is a Seventh-day Adventist all his life. And he kept asking them guys in the church. And I said, hey, how come you guys ain't keeping the annual holy days? And they kicked him out finally after a long time. They just put up with old Louis as long as they could. And finally they just said, you know, we've just had a belly full of you. Get the hell out of here. Guy's been going to church here for 30 years, deacon in the church, and he's doing all these good things, and they kick him out because he's asking hard questions, like, how come we don't do the annual holy days? And, well, I guess old Louis could read, and them Seventh-day Adventists, they can't read too good. And so here's these annual Sabbaths. You know, every Sabbath you shall set in order before the eternal continually being taken from the children of Israel by an everlasting covenant. And then in Leviticus 23:39, also on the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast unto the eternal 7 days. On the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the eighth day shall be a Sabbath. First and eighth day, two Sabbaths there. Feast of Tabernacles and last great day, it's called. In Leviticus 23:32, it shall be a Sabbath of rest to you. You shall afflict your souls in the ninth day of the month at even. From even until even shall you celebrate your Sabbath. That's called a Day of Atonement. And that's a fast day. That's not a feast day. It's a fast day. Leviticus 23:24, speak to the children of Israel, saying, the seventh month and the first day of the month shall you have a Sabbath, a memorial of the blowing of trumpets. It's a holy convocation. So you got the Feast of Trumpets. Leviticus 23:15-16 says, you shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. Even unto the morrow after the seventh Sabbath shall you number 50 days, and you shall offer a new meat offering unto the eternal. That's an odd day. That Sabbath right there, it's called the Feast of Weeks. Christians, they call it Pentecost. It always falls on a Sunday. Yeah. It always falls on a Sunday. And that's because it says, and you shall count 50 days from the Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread. And so, there you are. So if during the days of unleavened bread, if the Sabbath is on Saturday, and that's my contention here, it's on Saturday, Sunday then is the first day, the 50th day falls on a Sunday. So this particular day, it's the only one like this. Every other holy day during the year, it can fall on any day of the week except the Feast of Weeks. It always falls on a Sunday. Can't miss, because you're always counting from a Sunday, 50 days until you get to a Sunday. So anyway, there's that one. Now, here's a kicker for you. In Exodus 35, 2 and 3, 6 days shall work be done, but in the seventh day there shall be to you a holy day, a Sabbath, a rest unto the eternal. Whosoever does any work therein shall be put to death. And then in verse 3, you shall kindle no fire throughout your habitations on the Sabbath day. All right. Now remember, we're talking about how do you keep the Sabbath day? All right, so took this one down, and you put this little note in here. Don't kindle a fire on the Sabbath day. In fact, I'm going to tell you right up front, there's seven things you got to do. Why keep the Sabbath? There's seven things you got to do on the Sabbath day to keep the Sabbath holy. Well, if you want to follow this guy's instructions, there's seven things you got to do. So this is a report now on the Sabbath from the Bible. This isn't a report on the Sabbath now from the Pope or from the Catholics or from the Muslims or from anybody else. It's just from the Hebrew Scriptures. I didn't get this from the rabbi or the Pope or the pastor, the prophet, the priest, the potentate, the grand poobah. I don't know what those guys are telling us. I've got books here on my shelf. They got as many ideas about the Sabbath as there are guys to express them. And the same thing about the book of Revelation. They must have a dozen books here on the book of Revelation. And just from one old country boy to another, you know, they all sound good. They've all got good stories to tell. And I wouldn't throw rocks at these guys. You know, they've all got a good story to tell. I always pick up the Bible like this. There's a thing here that they talk about a lot called the rapture. The rapture. And there's about 70 million evangelical Christians that believe in the rapture. A guy came in here one day to class and says, "Hey, do you believe in the rapture?" And my wife said, "Yeah, we do. It happened last year." And the guy just looked at her with a blank stare like, "God, lady, you're out of touch with reality." It was like a flea crawling up an elephant's hind end with rape on his mind, I guess. Well, anyway, he was saddened by our answer. My wife has a smart mouth. This is my second wife. My first wife, she didn't have a smart mouth. And I don't know if she was smart enough to have a smart mouth, but anyway, the second wife, she's got a smart mouth, and she's smart enough to have a smart mouth. So this guy came in here one day and says, "I want to talk to George Gordon." And my wife said, you know, she tried to be real nice. She tries to be real diplomatic. She's got a lippy. She's a little lippy, got a smart mouth, but she tried real hard. And she said, "Well, can I help you?" And he said, "No, I want to get this right from the horse's mouth." And she couldn't contain herself. She'd been practicing for this for years. And she said, "Well, you're talking to the horse's ass, and that's as far up this horse as you're going to get." And so he was sad, and he hung up and laughed. He never bought a school, and he never called back again. Well, at least not under that name. So that happens once in a while. So if you call here at the law school and you get this lippy broad talking to you, okay, I'll just be kind to her and tell her what you need, and she'll probably tell you the answer to that. All right, so that's the trials and tribulations of old George and his wives. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all, and the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. We take in Catholics, Protestants, and Jews, and Muslims, and all kinds of critters coming to this law school. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log, schedule, and archives. That can be accessed to the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the Sabbath, S-A-B-B-A-T-H. And we're going to take a look at the Sabbath from the perspective or the point of view of the Bible as opposed to the point of view of sectarian religion. All right, does it make any difference which day you keep? Well, I would say that when you're dealing with a capital felony, it probably makes a big difference. This ain't a parking ticket. We're not talking about a speeding ticket and a couple of weeks in therapy, or you're going to have to go over here to some rehabilitation counseling or something like that. I'm talking about DEAD, D-E-D, capital felony. Now, of course, most people, they don't like this God to start with because he's a hanging judge. He's really a bad guy. But I didn't think he was all that bad. Frankly, I took a look at the Sabbath thing over and I said, well, what difference does it make to me what day of the week the Sabbath is on? And furthermore, what's wrong with taking a day off every once in a while? It seemed like to me that if I was going to make you work 7 days a week, you'd have a real bitch with me and say, well, you know, that guy's is just a slave driver. Why, he wants me to work 7 days a week. Here's a guy who comes along and he says, I want you to take off one day a week. I want you to sit down, roll a cigarette and just take in the slack and relax, drink a little Jack Daniels. It seems kind of strange to me that people would bitch about a guy that's telling them to take a day off, but they do. They don't like the day that he tells them to take off, and then they don't like to rest like he tells them to do. And so I pointed out to you in the last program, I said, you know, that's in Romans 8, verse 7. There's a scripture in there that says, the carnal mind is enmity against God. He isn't subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. So people are just naturally ticked off at this God because they don't like him. And so I thought I'd just come up here and tell you, well, okay, so you don't like him. Now, there's seven things that you have to do to keep the Sabbath. I mentioned that to you before the break, so let's take a look at these seven. Number one, you can't buy on the Sabbath, you can't sell on the Sabbath, you can't trade on the Sabbath, and you can't do business on the Sabbath. All right, so you can't do business, buy, sell, or trade. Well, now, Saturday just happens to be the busiest commercial day of the week. I mean, this is the day when all the sales are on. This is the day that everybody goes out and shops. You know, so we can get our shopping done. We work 5 days a week instead of six, and then we take off on Saturday and do all of our shopping on the Sabbath day so we can take the Lord's day off so we can go to church. And this God says, take Saturday off, work 6 days a week, and then don't go to church on Sunday. People want to fix his mistake. And so in case you're one of those that think that maybe God didn't make as big a mistake as you thought he did, well then. All right, now, you can't work, remember? We already covered that. We can't work on the Sabbath. You can't kindle a fire on the Sabbath, nor forsake the assembling of yourselves together on the Sabbath day, which you see in Hebrews 10:35. Now, I told you I was going to get this out of the Bible. So now get your pen and paper out here, and I'll show you where all these scriptures are. You ready? All right. Don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together on the Sabbath day. That's in Hebrews 10, verse 25. That's New Testament. You Christians, you can follow that. And that's what they tell you. You know, you got to go to church on Sunday. You know, you got to go. If you don't go to church, you're going to hell. Well, I'm going to hell. I don't deny that. My old dad told me, he said one time, he said, I want to go to hell because that's where all my friends are going to be. He said, if I went to heaven, I'd be a total stranger with no friends. That was my daddy. He's not going to heaven. I'm not going to heaven. I kind of doubt that you're going to heaven. Oh, Kent Hovind's going to heaven, though. He said he's going to go to heaven. He wants to get everybody saved so they can go to heaven. Heaven isn't the reward of the saved. That's another subject for another day. And hell is not the punishment of the condemned. The punishment, you know, for violating this law is death. D-E-A-T-H, death. Capital felony, death. And David hasn't ascended into the heavens, and he was a man after God's own heart. Moses died, and he was buried up on Mount something or other, Moriah or something. Mount Nebo, I guess it was. God himself buried Moses. Just thought I'd let you know. Now, you'd think if anybody was going to go to heaven to be with Jesus, it would have been Moses. You know, just think about it for a minute. The meek shall inherit the earth. My God, then the last thing in the world you want to be is meek. Because if the meek inherit the earth, you'll get stuck down here on planet earth, and you won't get to go to heaven to be with Jesus and run around on those roads up there and streets paved with gold. All right. All right, in Nehemiah 10, verse 31, Nehemiah, Ezra and Nehemiah, there's a couple of little books over here from a couple of guys. You know, you get to Esther, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job. All right, well, in Nehemiah, chapter 10, verse 31, so let me flip over to 10:31, where it says, and if the people of the land bring ware or any victuals on the Sabbath day to sell, that we would not buy it of them on the Sabbath or on the holy day, and that we would leave the seventh year and the exaction of every debt. Remember I said you can't buy, sell, trade, or do business on the Sabbath? Well, Nehemiah 10:31 is the statute that tells you that. Well, that's one of them. Now, in Nehemiah 13, verses 15 through 22, there's a little bit of a story here. So flip over a couple pages here to Nehemiah 15. Excuse me, Nehemiah 13, verse 15. And it says, and in those days saw I in Judah some trading wine presses on the Sabbath day, and bringing in sheaves and lading asses, as also wine grapes and figs, and all manner of burdens which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I testified against them in that day, wherein they sold victuals. There dwelt men of Tyre, also therein, which brought fish and all manner of ware, and sold on the Sabbath unto the children of Judah and in Jerusalem. Then I contended with the nobles of Judah, and said unto them, what evil thing is this that you do, and profane the Sabbath day? Did not our fathers thus? And did not our God bring all this evil upon us and upon this city? And yet you bring more wrath upon Israel by profaning the Sabbath? And it came to pass that when the gates of Jerusalem began to be dark before the Sabbath, I commanded that the gates should be shut, and charged that they should not be opened until after the Sabbath. And some of my servants set I at the gates that there should be no burden brought into the city on the Sabbath day. So the merchants and sellers of all kind of ware lodged without Jerusalem once or twice. Then I testified against them, and I said unto them, Why lodge you about the wall? If you do so again, I'll lay hands on you. And from that time forth came they no more on the Sabbath. All right, so that's quite a little story. That's Nehemiah 13, verses 15 through 22, how the Jews, in this case, at Jerusalem, had been taken into national captivity. And that's because the Israelites had already been taken into national captivity a couple hundred years before them. Under Cyrus the Great, the Jews came back after 70 years of captivity in Babylon. They came back to Jerusalem and rebuilt the city under Ezra and Nehemiah. And, you know, these people, you know, normal, everyday, garden variety people, and on the Sabbath day, which we haven't identified yet quite as Saturday, but we have identified that we got this thing called the Sabbath, trying to figure out now, what do you do to keep the Sabbath? Okay, well, there's the story. You can't buy, you can't sell, you can't trade, and you can't do business on the Sabbath. All right, so there's your story. Now, that's Nehemiah 10:31, Nehemiah 13, 15 through 22. Now, I already showed you that you can't kindle a fire on the Sabbath in Exodus 35, verse 3. Remember that one? Exodus 35, verse 3. All right, so now there's the buying, selling, trading, and the business. All right, so I'm going to circle those off. I showed you where those were in the Bible. And then the forsaking of yourselves, or the assembling of yourselves together, in Hebrews 10, verse 25. There's one more over here. One more. Now that is in Isaiah 58, verse 13. So let's flip over here to Isaiah 58, verse 13. I'll just read it to you so you can see for yourself here what God expects you to do here on the Sabbath. Be patient with me, I'm old. Isaiah 58, verse 13. Here it is. It says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and you call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the eternal, honorable, and if you will honor him, that is the Creator God, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then shall you delight yourself in the eternal, and I will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the eternal has spoken it. Well, that's pretty good. That's a pretty neat deal, I'd say. Well, there's only one other real neat deal that I can think of here in the Bible. I'm going to read that one to you. That has to do with the tithing. Did you know that? Tithing. And in Malachi, it's in an odd book here called Malachi 3, verse 8. He says, if you'll do this, if you'll tithe, he says, will a man rob God? Yet you've robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed you? And he answers, in tithes and offerings. He says, you're cursed with a curse, because you've robbed me, even this whole nation. You bring the tithes into my storehouse, that there may be meat in my house, and prove me now herewith, says the Eternal Host, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room to receive it. All right, so now twice now he's made this deal. It might be a third place over here. Yeah, but about Mark 10:28 be a third one over here. Now, did you get this? If you tithe, he says, I'll open the windows of heaven. There won't be room enough to, you know, for you to put it all. He says, if you keep the Sabbath over here, he says, I'm going to bless you with the heritage of your father Jacob. Now, did you know what old Jake had? Let me tell you the story about old Jake. Jacob, our father Jacob. Jacob had 12 boys. And each one of those boys is the progenitor of one of the 12 tribes of Israel. So all you French people over there descended from the tribe of Reuben. And you Dutch people over there, you're descended from the tribe of Zebulun. You white South Africans are descended from Asher. You Swiss descended from Gad. And you English people over there descended from Joseph. You know, just to give you a little illustration. So there's 12 of us out here, see? And so our father Jacob, the progenitor of our tribes over here, he inherited the inheritance from Abraham. You know, how much money did Abraham have? Well, Abraham had 318 servants, 318 hired men. He was in the cattle business. Now, those of us that are in the cattle business know that one man can handle about 100 cows. One man, 100 cows. Now, it's easier for two men to handle 200 cows than it is for one man to handle 100, but I just wanted to let you know that. When you got 318 guys out there, we can handle quite a few head. Now, if Abraham had 318 servants times 100, that's 31,800 head of cattle. That's a big, big herd of cattle. 31,800. Now, Abraham had quite a bit of ground because God took him up on top of this mountain. I forgot exactly which hill it was now, but he took him up on top of this hill. It seemed to me, if I remember, I was 4,000 feet. I think I looked this up once before. He said, Abe, turn around, and I'm going to give you all the real estate that you can see out there. Now, I don't know how much real estate you can see. I don't know if it was a foggy day, if it was an overcast day. I don't know if it was a clear day or if it was obstructed by ozone or a smog or whatever. But, you know, if it was about like Ozark County here, you could see about 800 square miles. Well, 800 square miles times 640 acres. is 512,000 acres. And divided by 31,000 head of livestock would be about 16 acres per head, which is very, very reasonable. So Old Abe had about 800 square miles of real estate, about 31,000 head of livestock, which means that he had about 30,000 head of calves to sell every year. Now today, if we had 30,000 head of cattle, and we were selling 30,000 head of calves times $500 each, we'd be taking in about $15 million a year. Now Abraham was taking in $15 million a year from the time he was 90 until he was about 175. So let's just go and be reasonable, you know, times 50 years, $750 million. Our great-great-great-great-granddaddy Abraham had a lot of money, and he passed that money on to his boy Jacob. Jacob inherited $750 million. Now, Jacob had 12 boys, and a guy by the name of Joseph, one of the 12, he got more than anybody else. He got what was called the birthright. Judah got the scepter. That was a tidy sum. All of the boys received some money. I don't know how much money they received. The Bible doesn't tell us, but they received a bunch. And I'm going to say, you know, just to be reasonable, they all received about $50 million each. And Joseph got the lion's share, and Jacob, you know, had inherited around, you know, half a billion. You know, he wasn't a Bill Gates, but, you know, he wasn't, you know, a bag lady under a bridge either. So that'll give you a little idea. Now, he says, I'm going to feed you with the heritage of your father Jacob, who had $750 million. Now, that's wealth. If you'll keep the Sabbath day, he says, I'm going to give you some real wealth. So I pass that on to you just as a reporter, you know, suggesting that maybe you might want to try it out. Now, I was teaching school here the other day, and I had a student come in here, nice guy. And Bob's his name, and Robert, he didn't like Bob, or his name's Robert. And he said he's got his Social Security number because he couldn't make a living without it. And I said, that Social Security number is the mark of the beast. If you get rid of that Social Security number, I said, I think you'll make more money. At least that was the case in my case. You know, I used to have a Social Security number, and I got along all right, but I got rid of it, and I made more money without it than I ever did with it. And then I tried this tithing thing over here, and I found that by tithing, I make more money than if I don't tithe. So I tithe not because I'm religious, but because it makes money. And I'm a greedy pig. And then the Sabbath day over here, I noticed here in Isaiah 58, says, if you'll keep the Sabbath day over here, I'll bless you with the heritage of your father Jacob. I took a look at Jake, and old Jake had $750 million. I thought, shucks, I don't need $750 million, but if I had one or two or $3 million, I'd be a real just tickled pink. Even in today's inflated bucks, you know, that'd be a pretty tidy little nest egg, you know, $2 or $3 million. And I'm not a Bill Gates, but, you know, I ain't a bag lady under the bridge, and it's been working out pretty well for me, so I'm just going to pass along to you three things over here that you might want to keep in mind. The third one is, remember, the tithing is one, and the Sabbath is two. Turn over here to Mark 10:38, the little book here called Mark. It's in the New Testament. It's okay, you Christians can read this because it's in the New Testament. And it has to do here, in Mark 10:28, it has to do here with money again. And I'm real interested in money. And then it says here, Peter, verse 28, then Peter began to say to them, or him, lo, we've left all and we followed you. And Jesus answered and said, truly I say unto you, there is no man that's left house or brethren or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or lands for my sake and the gospel's, but he shall receive 100-fold now in this time. 100-fold. He's going to get 100 times more. Houses and brethren and sisters and mothers and children and lands with persecution. Now that's the downside. When you do this, if you leave Roman Catholicism, or Lutheranism, or Baptistism, you know, if you leave Muslimism, if you leave those religions and you practice the Ten Commandments, including the Sabbath, tithing, holy days, and the seventh year land Sabbath and the Jubilee. Now, this is not just one Sabbath now I'm talking about all of them. All, you know, you Seventh-day Adventists, nice people that you are. I don't think it's satisfactory to do one and then not do the others. That's just my take on it. So I think if you keep the weekly Sabbath, that's a step in the right direction. Kind of like I had a guy in here one time, and he said, well, I go to the whorehouse, you know, about once a week. And we're talking about adultery, say, and fornication. And I said, well, you know, that's a capital felony, that adultery. And he said, well, I hear you. I said, well, how would it be if I taper off without going cold turkey, you know, just taper off. Instead of going once a week, I'll go twice a month. And then after a while, instead of going twice a month, I'll just go once a month. And then, you know, after a while, you know, then maybe it's only twice a year. And then maybe I can taper off and I can get off of this Flo's whorehouse. I said, well, you know, you got a good point there. It's a step in the right direction. I suppose even God himself would be impressed with a guy that quit going to Flo's every Friday night and just went twice a month. But I pointed out, I said, you know, the penalty for adultery one time is death. I guess if you were working for the mafia and you were in Murder Incorporated and you were killing one guy a week, you know, trying, you know, just making a living. And you said, well, thou shalt do no murder, and so you quit murdering people once a week, and you just did it twice a month, and then once a month, you know, while you're making the transition from Murder Incorporated to some other form of employment or profession, I guess that'd be a step in the right direction, but I wanted to point out that murder, just one, you don't have to kill 50 million people, just one, we'll do it, that'll That'll get you the death penalty. And so I just wanted to point out here that you got some persecution that comes along if you do this. So you might have to give up murder, you know, find another line of work. You might have to give up Sabbath breaking. And you might have to give up keeping all the money and practicing tithing. And you might have to give up the income tax and then practice tithing in place of it. It's a wild new concept, but I thought I'd share that one with you. And in the process of doing that, he says, I will give you 100 times the amount that you lose. I was in hopes when I did this quite a few years ago now, but I was in hopes I'd lose $10,000. And wouldn't you know it, I never lost a dime. Because see, if I could have lost $10,000, I could come to God and say, hey, God, you owe me 100 times 10,000, that's $1 million. And just to show you how big I am about that, God, you don't have to pay me right away and take your time. Because notice here, he's going to pay you in this time, before you die. I mean, we're not talking about going to heaven to be with Jesus to collect your reward. We're talking about right now, liquidated damages, today, before you kick off, partner. So just once more, so that you can get it, there's three moves here that you can make to start making a little money. If you if you'll practice the Sabbath, practice tithing, and then if you will practice the law of God, the Ten Commandments, he says, I'll cause you to ride on the high places. I'll pour you out a blessing. You won't have room enough to receive it, and I'll pay you right now before you die. I thought that was a pretty neat deal. I'm out of time again, so I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about The Law Hour and The Law School, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling The Law School at 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. Now, The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.